While you were editing Dr. Dobbs' journal, you also started the West Coast Computer Fair, which was the largest computer convention and exposition of its time. Were you also creating an intentional community when you did that, or were you part of a computing industry by then?
If it was an industry, it was in barely postnatal form. It was a bunch of strange companies, a bunch of folks who were ex-hobbyists or who started out as hobbyists and had a bright idea, or folks who were small electronics companies or distributors and decided, oh, hey, I want to get in on this also. There was Flyby Nitronics, that was a company. There was Blastmasters, who did both printed circuit cards for the MITS Altair, but also did, their primary business was blowing up things. There were just all sorts of companies. Professors at Stanford, Harry Garland and Roger Mellon, spun off and or created a part-time thing called Chromemco, which was the first video board or board that could drive really interesting and fun colors on a television screen. If it was an industry, it was an infant industry. Some number of people who were doing it for money. And in some sense, any person who's in business is doing it for money. But most of them weren't. A lot of them were doing it because it was fun to do. I mean, there were a bunch of driving forces. One was, I'm tired of working for this big conglomerate, this big straight suit-laden corporation. I'm going to spin off and do my own thing. Maybe I'll fail, but maybe I'll succeed. And in the meantime, I'll have fun trying. There was as much, with probably most of the people in those early days who were creating all of these little companies and all of these little products, some of which were great, some of them were just terrible. There was probably more a spirit of, I want to do my own thing in my own way, I want to push the frontier, than there was a spirit of, I can make money doing this. With Woz and Jobs. I mean, Woz created the Apple I computer not because he wanted to be in business. He created it because he wanted a computer that worked exactly the way he wanted it to work. Not the way the Altair worked or the MSI or those others. He wanted it to work his way. And in fact, he got dispensation from, he was an employee at Hewlett-Packard at the time. He was about to create this little company that he and his high school buddy, Steve Jobs, decided to call Apple Computer, and he went to Hewlett-Packard and said, well, I'd like to do this. Can we do this? Or, you know, I've got to get your permission as my employee. And Hewlett-Packard said, well, we're not interested in this personal computer stuff. Of course you can do it. And gave him a release to do it. Little did HP know. In the 60s and on into the early 70s, this attitude of trying new things and of sharing, of community spirit, if you will, communitarian behavior, was very much a part of it. And it was very much a part of the socially acceptable behavior in the antisocial crowd, in the rebellious crowd, if you will. That carried on into early personal computing. And the folks who came to the Homebrew Computer Club, which is an interesting story in itself, came there to share. Certainly, I took that attitude very consciously and overtly in publishing Dr. Dobbs' journal. Send us your information. We will share it with everyone. Let us stand on each other's shoulders rather than each other's toes. Let us cooperate instead of compete and see how far we can get collectively, together, but as individuals, each going in their own way, sharing where there's sharing to be done. It's my contention that that ready willingness to share and exchange information and exchange solutions to problems, and there were endless technological problems in the beginning, just as there still are, but they're more sophisticated now. With the Homebrew Computer Club, which had, oh, hundreds of people attending it every other week, that start at 7, it would break up at 10:30 or 11 at night, and then the hardcore would go over to Zots or the Oasis and for hamburger and beer and keep on going there until they were kicked out. the idea was to share information. At the Homebrew Computer Club, in the first part of it, people would stand up and say, I have, or I want, or I need, or have you heard about, or here's a problem, or I have a solution. And then in the latter part of the Homebrew Computer Club meeting, people would run all over the room talking to 5 or 10 other people that they'd spotted who said something interesting. What happened more often than not there was, with all of these problems, you know, somebody would say, I have a problem. 2 weeks later, somebody had come to a homebrew meeting saying, hey, you know that problem? I've got a solution. Hey, everybody here, let me tell you how it works. It's my contention that that kind of exchange of information built much of Silicon Valley innovation in the mid-70s on into the early 80s and facilitated it in ways that were far, far better and far more efficient in exchanging and sharing and standing on each other's shoulders than was going on in the rest of the United States.
What you've just stated is very much the thesis of the book by Annalise Axenian of Berkeley. I forget the title of the book, but the main idea is that the hierarchical nature of the computer companies around Route 128 in Boston, where nobody from Company A ever spoke to Company B employees, held Massachusetts back, and very much the sharing social culture of the engineering staff out here in the Bay Area is what made the startup fervor and the economic growth eventually happen.
I completely agree. I only have very limited familiarity with what goes on in, or what was going on at the time in Massachusetts and in Texas around Dallas and Texas Instruments, but they were very locked down. Also in the mid-1970s, about 75 or 76, Dennis Allison and some others from the IEEE Computer Society, these were all established, very competent computer professionals, created something called the Asilomar Microcomputer Workshop, which was held and still is being held down at the Asilomar Retreat in Pacific Grove, where they would invite about 100 people, and they selected, okay, you can come, you can't come. And the criteria wasn't you're a big wheel, or you have a lot of money, or you're a big marketroid, or you're really good at selling stuff. The criteria was on the program committee and the steering committee, and I was on it for 10 or 15 years, the very conscious criteria was, is somebody doing something that I personally really find interesting and would like to find out more about? And if so, can I talk some of the other program committee members into agreeing that this is neat stuff and we should hear about it? And that's how they invited people. I referred to the Asilomar Microcomputer Workshop as Silicon Valley's trade secret swap shop, probably drove patent attorneys and intellectual property attorneys absolutely stark raving mad. Everything was off the record. Everybody came in and you could say anything and it wasn't recorded and you understood right from the get-go, this is just between us chickens. Incidentally, John Markoff attended that several times.